Welcome, everybody, to Capes and Scowls West.
West.
Episode 49. I am one of your hosts, Nat, and with me today is...
Pat!
And Cat in Hat.
Yay!
We're going to review some Batman and Superman comics, talk about some TV and movie news, but first we are going to go to the top of the stack, and I am going to talk about No One Left to Fight. This is a Dark Horse comic book from Aubrey Sitterson and Fico Osio. And I kind of cheated with this one, because this is the top of my stack from about a month ago, actually. So, yes, this is technically the first comic I read of all the things we will be discussing, because I read it a long time ago.
Because it was physically available.
Because it was physically available to me, digitally physically available to me. Aubrey Sitterson actually called the shop, called Griffin Games and Comics, and was like, hey, I should tell you about this book, which I was already excited about, so it was really great to see. But this is a love letter to fight anime and fight video games like Street Fighter and Dragon Ball Z, and it's a blast. There's a deeper meaning to this. The lead character, Vale, is seemingly on a journey to relive his past, and it seems like he is the character who's been left behind, where everybody else from the glory days of their fighting days has moved on and grown families and done other things. He lives in a state of depression and maybe something more. I really loved this book. The colors, the art, the way everything comes together. There was this nice sense of what comes next. So
yeah, it was fun.
Yep.
It was definitely enjoyable. I just like how the back half of the comic, I was like, huh, this is like Dragon Ball Z.
Really, the whole thing,
I'm not really reading.
Yeah, the whole thing played out exactly as if like Goku was visiting Vegeta and Bulma.
I will say at least this guy has the potential and ability to actually be in love with another woman instead of Goku, who's just an idiot.
Well, I kept saying valet.
I you know what? I actually said vile.
Vile, yeah.
Yeah, because of
there's the accent.
The accent over the top.
I did not even attempt to try and figure out what it was. Not even going to lie. I was like, okay. Looks like Vale to me. Go ahead.
I think it was an interesting thing, too, that, you know, in DBZ, Goku has the family and, you know, doesn't necessarily understand or relate to it, but...
No.
But this,
worst dad ever.
But Vale, or Vale, or Vale, we'll just go say Vale, because that's easiest.
Vale.
Doesn't. He seems like he's got... Really doesn't have anything. Like, he has his past. So
I don't know.
He seems like he has a problem with it, too.
Yeah.
He saved the planet once.
He saved the planet once, right?
So, you know.
And I also think
he's
it's interesting
Goku.
That...
only once.
That his friend Krista has a mechanical arm. Almost like there's a story to tell there about how she lost that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know.
Everyone's design is super cool in this, too. It draws so much from, like, DBZ.
Yep.
His pink hair is weirding me out, though, and it's mostly just because I keep thinking, it's like, this looks like Dragon Ball Z. His hair, why is his hair
everyone's
pink?
Hair color
is it?
Is
what
different.
Is this shit? Not he's not Trunks?
It looks like it's a genetic thing, too, because, the friend and Krista, I forget his name now, but they have blue and green hair, and they're two children. One has blue hair, and the other has green hair.
Yep.
So.
And I think that, what is it, the female matches the female, and the male matches the male?
No, it's reversed. It's
is
actually
it reversed?
Based on the skin tone. So the light-skinned child has the blue hair, and the dark-skinned child has the green hair.
Oh, interesting.
So, so you might be onto it like a genetic trait. Like,
that's a fun little play there.
Yeah. So maybe that'll play out even more so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really cool, fun book.
Good time.
Can't wait to read more.
Cool. Well, speaking of a cool, fun book, sorry to just jump in there, but I got Space Bandits number one. This is an Image number one, so usually the top of my stack is whatever new Image title there is. Shout out to Mark Miller and Mateo Scalera.
Yeah, yeah.
Writer and artist. Great job there. This is so much fun as well. Just a romp through space 80s.
Space 80s.
I'm still trying to understand if it is actually the 80s or they just live in the 80s in this sector of space.
I got the feeling that it was just like what's fashionable now.
Yeah. So the 80s, it's far into the future in outer space, but like the 80s just caught up to it.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, this was great. They got the two like masterminds. I was kind of wondering how this story would come together, and then they're on the Chris Station, which is like such
a
cool
ship design.
Yeah. It's not a ship.
Oh, excuse me, yeah.
It's a giant...
Dead god.
Or something that was worshipped as a god. Yeah. Really could have just been a crab or a lobster floating through space.
Probably a giant lobster, yeah.
Well, if they're celebrating the 80s, that makes sense, because the 80s was about lavish, so...
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. I didn't think I'd get that thought, but that's totally true.
I wonder if that's when a rock lobster came out. I need to go back. We're going to go down an 80s rabbit hole really quick.
Yeah,
for sure.
It was a lot of fun.
I mean, honestly, I will say for me with that one, I was kind of wishing that one of them was male and the other was female and see that dynamic instead, with both of them having the broken heart instead of just both the females, because I'm like, I've seen that all the time. Do something funny.
I can't say that I loved this book. I don't know. It was just like it didn't stick with me, I guess, would be the biggest thing for it. And it may have been the crop of books I read it.
Yeah, I was gonna say there was a lot this week.
So. Yeah, even though it was the top of my stack, it definitely fell in a hard week. I wouldn't put it as my favorite one of the week by a long shot, but not saying that it was bad.
No, not at all. Mark Miller is amazing.
It was a great book, but yeah, it was a pretty heavy week this week. So
I will say Mateo Scalera is one of the best, if not the best, working artist in comics. Like, his choices and his line is unreal.
I love his line work. Yeah. It's so interesting.
I love his faces too, because he's like very Hanna-Barbera. So like, he'll just do whatever nose works for the character. You know, like, doesn't, no constraint. It's like, this is fun.
Which is funny because like the first splash page is a giant spaceship with Lionel Richie's
Exactly. So ridiculous.
So ridiculous.
I actually have a print by Scalera of Batman because.
Yeah, well,
that's crazy.
Yeah, well, how about you, Kat? What was your top of the stack this week?
My top of the stack, it was Batman Damned, because I just want to know how the damn story ended. But we can talk about that a little bit later,
and we will in a future episode.
So not future episode. Tuned. We'll do it today.
In this episode. So stay tuned.
All right, well, cool. Well, we're going to move on to the news, try to get through some stuff. So Star Trek Picard has a showrunner. Is Michael Chabon or Chabin. I don't know the correct way of pronouncing his name.
I always say it as Chabon.
Chabon.
But I don't know. He's definitely not Hispanic. But
he is a Pulitzer Prize winning author as well as a comic book writer.
It's funny because the book that won him the Pulitzer is a novel about comic book writers. So
that's not meta at all.
Yeah, I know, right? Well, but I'm excited to see him. I mean, he's a good writer. And Patrick Stewart's a good actor, so together I'm sure they're going to make some good content.
Yay! Yeah, I'm excited for the show. I still don't know that I want to get the CBS All Access Network, you know?
Yeah.
Nobody does. That's why they're like, we're doing more Star Trek, though, guys!
Yeah. Well, and Discovery has like an up and down following too, so it's not like, it's not a clear cut thing where like people are super into Discovery. It's kind of like, some people really love it, and some people don't, so...
Yeah, I really like it. I've met, as a Star Trek fan, a lot of the people that don't like it is for Star Trek fan reasons, like they don't have the same uniforms, or the Klingons don't look the same.
Gotcha. And
that's pretty much all the criticism I've heard.
Hashtag not my Superman.
Yeah, not my... Klingons is the big one. And I was like, they have a budget now. They have money. They don't just have to paint a guy's face brown and give him a wig anymore.
It's a bringer conversation of, like, nostalgia or the past versus what's available now. I've been having conversations about this, but, like, top five movies. It's like, do you hold reverence to things because they're old as opposed to... enjoying what we're capable of now, you know, like kind of like,
considering that I've watched Batman and Robin and I love that movie as a kid, so good. I'm gonna go with nostalgia for something.
Yeah. Whereas I rewatched Batman 89 and I'm like, holds up.
Yeah, totally off topic. 2001 is still my favorite movie, and that's over 50 years old, and it holds up incredibly.
Yeah.
So
is it that old? I thought it was the 1980s.
68.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's almost, you know, 1980s is old. Well, no, I guess
it's 40. It's 40 years old.
It's 51.
Why did I feel like
so? Okay, anyway, we're going to move on.
Yes, totally.
I did that.
So Walking Dead is dead at issue 193.
Yeah, I saw that they were supposed to have three more issues, too, and the writer, I'm forgetting his name.
Robert Kirkman.
Kirkman is just like, nope.
Yep.
Done.
I have mixed feelings about this. I'm not an active Walking Dead reader. I read it, the first few story arcs, was reading probably like issue 25.
If you're an active Walking Dead reader, those are you're a hard cut comic book fan.
Seriously. But I had a problem with this from a retailer's perspective because, you know, with end issues of something that's this big, we want to have things on shelf because people want to read these, and not cool image, we could have had them on shelves, but when you announce it the day before it actually happens, nothing we can really do.
Oh, I see what you're saying, because they pretty much announced it. Yeah, they did announce it the day before Tuesday.
Yep.
So that's fine. Their second printing is available. Like I said, this is probably boring conversation, but it's just kind of frustrating for me.
Well, but that does give the active fans kind of something because, you know, they'll all have the first printings, and then for people that want to just have the last issue.
Yeah.
Well, for me, I'm just like, now, if only the show, which is... Walk into the sunset as well.
Oh man,
I feel like it's slowly doing that.
Right? Yeah. Except when they're like, "We're gonna make three more movies about Rick," even though we kind of sort of killed him off. And I'm like, "What?"
They're like in that South Park scene when they send the Canadians off on the iceberg and they're like yelling, like, "I'm not your show, buddy. I'm not your program, pal."
Yeah, exactly.
That's hilarious.
All right. What else do we have?
We'll go into much, much lighter news. Teen Titans Go versus Teen Titans trailer has released. I'm in on this movie, so I don't know that the trailer did anything that was going to be like, yay, I'm excited. It's like, no, I was excited. Once you just said that, it's like, this is going to be released. I went, cool, okay, I'm watching this.
So is this going to be a straight-to-DVD movie, or is this a TV movie?
Straight-to-Blu-ray.
Blu-ray, okay. Yeah, no, I'm really excited for this, though. I wish they would do it on the DC streaming service, though.
It probably will. The way that they've been handling those releases, although Batman TMNT has not happened this way, is that it'll release
week of...
I don't
think they have complete rights to that.
Yeah,
though.
Nickelodeon has partial rights to that one.
Yeah, Batman TMI, more like it.
I've heard great reviews for that one, actually.
So, fair enough.
But yeah, I'm excited about this. I think they teased it at the end of Teen Titans Go that there was going to be something like this, so... Whether or not there's actually a story there about, like, where the Teen Titans were, that multiverse idea.
I think, ironically enough, too, I saw something about Young Justice ending up in that universe.
That's hilarious.
Well, because there's, like, totally an... I mean, there's an episode or a bit in an episode of Go where they, like, come into this universe and, like, meet the staff that writes the show. Like...
That's some heady stuff.
Yeah, and it's all, like, animated versions of, like, all the actual writers and, like, cartoonists
and
stuff.
That's even weirder.
And they're like, hey.
That's weirder.
It just makes me think of Stan Lee.
Yes!
I just love cameos.
This is a DC movie.
Yeah, I think we're definitely the core audience for this. So.
Well, I mean, the other movie just had so many things in it with just DC in general.
Teen Titans Go to the Movies was such a sucker punch to me. Like, I was expecting nothing, and it gave me everything.
And actually, that's a good point, is those trailers weren't exactly, like, super hype for the movie, you know? It's like, I'm going to go see this because I want to see what it is.
Yeah.
And same thing here. It's like, I guess it really doesn't matter what the trailer is. I just want to see it.
You know? It was mostly... Well, because the trailer for the movie was mostly just, like, all this Superman telling them that they'll never be anything.
Right.
You know? Which is like the first like 20 minutes of the movie.
I would also like to point out too, now that I think about it, we haven't really even said that the second half of Young Justice came out on Tuesday too.
No, the first three episodes. Yep.
Yeah, oh, on Tuesday?
Yeah.
I love that. What?
Time, man. There's too much stuff going on right now.
I was gonna go home and watch it after this because it's Friday currently.
Right.
So I thought I was gonna do that, but
I just gave Patrick a good day.
Well, now I'm sad that I didn't spend my Tuesday watching it.
That's what my Tuesday watching Far From Home and reading comics. So
that's fair enough. That's a good Tuesday.
It's a nice trade off.
Yeah.
Cool. So we have some more movie news here. Apparently, The Flash is again going a directorial and writing change. So now IT director Andy Muschietti is apparently in talks with Warner Brothers to direct Flash. No surprise. I mean, Andy Muschietti had great success with Warner Brothers with IT. And also, screenwriter Christina Hodson is in talks to write the film. That excites me even more than Andy Muschietti being involved with his director because of how good Bumblebee was. And I keep saying that because I don't think enough people saw Bumblebee. And it is, not only is it the best Transformers movie, it's one of the best Steven Spielberg films.
Whoa.
In years, and Spielberg didn't even direct it.
Did he produce it?
No. It just feels like, well, he did because it's Paramount. So I think it's his production studio. But it felt like good Spielberg, like E.T. type filmmaking.
Yeah.
And a girl and her dog story. And so I'm excited about that.
When a dog is a transforming
but
car.
But dog is a transforming car. They also have literally the first like 10 minutes of the movie is the best Transformers we've ever seen. So go see Bumblebee is what I'm saying.
Wow. Interesting. I fell off that track on halfway through two.
I at least made it through two. And nope. Then after that.
So this is an age difference. You know when I fell off? About halfway through one.
Really?
I left the theaters and went, that was the biggest piece of garbage I've seen. Why were there so many people in this movie? Should be a movie about Transformers.
I grew up with the animated series, so.
I grew up, yeah, anime series, animated movie. I grew up with Beast Wars and Beast Movies, too. Like, that was big for me. But anyway, John Francis Daley and Jonathan Goldstein have exited the project, and Ezra Miller and Grant Morrison's script has been passed on. However, Ezra Miller is still attached as Flash.
Yeah, so. Well, because I think the reason he asked Grant Morrison to help write a script just because he was sad at the pace the movie was going forward, which is a little ironic for the Flash movie.
Well, my biggest thing with that is Ezra Miller is a little weird. Grant Morrison's got weird storylines. God only knows how weird that movie probably got.
Yeah, I'm sure the execs looked at Grant Morrison's script and they were just like, we would like to make money and not have just an hour and a half of weird things happening.
They were probably just like, okay, so, comic book readers, yeah. We need, normal people who aren't into comics.
Yeah.
The everyday person who goes through life and goes to their 9-to-5 and doesn't read comics to show up to our movie.
The amount of suspension of disbelief you have to read a Grant Morrison comic does not translate into moviegoers.
Well, no, because it makes sense in the comic.
I don't know. Doom Patrol has gone over very well.
Okay, but that's because it's like towards the comic book audience.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I think there's probably a tonal problem with that too, because Grant Morrison gets very existential and kind of dark.
Yes.
And I think if they're trying to do a more traditional Flash, especially Barry, that's going to be much more lighthearted filmmaking. So that's what excites me about Christina Hodson, is because Bumblebee is a lighthearted film. Mm-hmm. Although she's writing Birds of Prey as well, and Birds of Prey does not look like it's going to be light. That looks like it's going to be a darker, but it's probably going to have elements of
I was
going to
say, you have Harley Quinn in there, and she's going to be probably more than likely all the comedic relief in that movie.
Yeah, which is good.
Yeah. Well, that's what she's made for.
Yeah. So I'm excited about this. And now that you say that, like Ezra Miller and Morrison, and like they're saying this is much more for the comic audience, that'd be a great miniseries.
Or an animated film.
Yeah. Well, I would like a comic book form.
I'd take that too.
Ezra Miller, Grant Morrison, Flash, and then just get a superstar artist on that book.
That'd
be great.
Yeah, but, you know, why not? Why throw away the script? So, yeah.
I said, I'm pretty sure, like, Grant Morrison gets weird, and then you add Ezra Miller on top of it. It's probably just, like, the comics just, like, okay, the writing in here, like, on the side over here, it literally is spelling weird right now.
I smell a Flash Black Label story.
Ooh, right. Yeah, I was about to say, I'm looking forward to the next Grant Morrison DC comic. Cause he's still writing Green Lantern right now,
yep.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay. I love that book.
Yeah, that was another one where I'm like, my brain's bleeding.
I know, I'm just thinking of, like, when I was saying this, that they passed up on the script, I'm just thinking of my read of Green Lantern number one. Earlier, just like, the exact same reaction. What the fuck is going on in this book?
What? Yeah, that was issue one. You have no idea what happens later.
Yeah, it was. Yes. I think it was eight or was it eight where they were like, no, no, it was seven when they were in the power ring.
Inside
eight
the ring.
Was the giant, weird looking green lantern or green arrow.
I haven't read eight or nine yet.
It's weird, man. Not that it was normal to begin with.
Don't spoil the weirdness.
Yeah, I like the weird. Anyway, so we have a cast for the title character of The Little Mermaid. Halle Bailey, not Barry, Halle Bailey has been cast as The Little Mermaid. I know that Zendaya was in talks for a long time. That had been the thing. And
I'm pretty sure she can't sing. That's probably why.
And that the thing is, similar looks. Yes. The two actresses look very similar with facial structure.
Bailey looks older, but she's 19, and I think they're about the same age.
Yeah, they're about the same age. The thing is, wow, can Halle Bailey sing? Wow, 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 wow. I watched about a minute and a half of her singing and just was like, jaw on the floor.
Really? Yeah. I haven't heard it at all, so.
It's pretty incredible. She reminded me of, like, Whitney Houston, and I know that's, like, huge praise.
Wow,
but
yeah.
I was pretty enthralled.
Yeah, because I was looking at her IMDb, and the only thing I recognized on it was Grown-ish. Because she's been as a Black-ish spinoff.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. She's like, her breakout role is a spinoff series.
Zendaya is actually older than her.
That's funny.
How old is she?
She's 22. Oh,
Zendaya's 20. Whoa.
Yeah, right?
Yeah. I just watched Far From Home, so.
Yeah.
That's a little weird.
That is, yeah. But I'm excited about this casting. I think having a wonderful singer for Ariel is really, really important, so.
No, I don't disagree. It's just weird because I look at her and I'm like, you don't look 19. Can I see, like, I'm at that moment in time where I'm like, can I see your birth certificate? Is it what you're wearing right now? I don't understand.
I think there's going to be an element to you of, like, the CG and the makeup that they can be used to make sure they age her down, you know, and like, try to play up the teenage aspect of the story.
Yeah. So I think if they give her, like, a red hair, too, that might
pull
into it a little bit. I don't know if they're going to do that or, like, how they're going to do the hair, because that's pretty iconic. Yeah. But,
well, and the hair will probably be fairly CG'd, the same way they did Aquaman.
Yeah, like, because it's it's going to be underwater.
And we assume that they'll drive through wet.
That's weird. So I'm like, Zendaya is actually older than her, but she's older than Zendaya. I don't know anymore.
I really thought the whole time until last night when I was going back through the news that it was Halle Berry. And I was like, Halle Berry's a Little Mermaid. She's like in her 40s or something.
No, she's 52,
right?
I think.
52?
I
think
so.
Damn!
I mean, she looks...
She looks better than I do. I will be 26 on Sunday, but she looks better than I do at 26, so...
She definitely doesn't look a day over 20, so...
Wow.
But, you know...
52. She was born in 1966.
So I was like, damn, Halle Berry is the Little Mermaid. This is going to be a crazy movie.
Well, that was my thing. I was like, is this after? Because someone, when they released it, when I first talked about it, someone typoed when they did it, and it said Halle Berry. And I was like, so is this, like, Little Mermaid after she's had a family and a successful career, and she's now in her golden years of retirement? Is this what's happening?
I don't know. That's,
anyways.
That probably freaked a lot of people out.
Yeah.
Also, in regards to The Little Mermaid, it looks like Melissa McCarthy is in talks for Ursula. I love this casting. I think this could be really cool.
I was promised Lady Gaga, and I will have Gaga or nothing.
And we actually had a little conversation before recording. It'd be kind of cool if they cast them both. So they did the transformation sequence when, spoilers, Ursula steals Ariel's voice when she transforms. Rather than doing a big CG thing where they have to change what Ursula looks like, you just have Lady Gaga play that version of the character. Because we're trying to do live action here, right? Let's not just have a full CGI character that isn't a talking fish on screen.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Well, we're talking bird, too, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of random talking animals in Little Mermaid.
A seagull.
That movie's really weird when you start looking back on it.
Flounder. I'm pretty sure there's some heat seahorses that talk.
That is really weird. I started thinking about Aladdin. Like, Apu does not talk.
No.
He makes clicks and things.
He emotes. But, like, Little Mermaid, straight up animals talk to her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Sebastian,
obviously. I think I did. That was the one where I forgot. Sebastian.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, we got a weird rabbit hole.
They also all play instruments. Let's...
Hey, that's canon for all animal life in the sea.
That's true. Big Aquaman, Aquaman.
I don't know why, but just thinking about Sebastian now, I really want Snoop Dogg as Sebastian. I don't know why I just thought about that.
I'm trying to picture like, Under the Sea by Snoop Dogg.
He's actually a decent singer.
Yeah, I just I can't do like think a of rap. The tempo.
You could do like a rap version.
I'm not even going to go there. We've got to move past this one.
Under the Sea, sucker. Sorry.
So what's underwater weed? Because if he doesn't have that in his claw,
he's smoking some seaweed, bro.
Seaweed. Oh my god. All right. We're going to move on. So Neil Gaiman has a Netflix deal for a Sandman series. He's going to be writing co-writing the first episode with showrunner Alan Heidenberg, most recently famous for the script of Wonder Woman, and executive producer David Goyer. Looks like the first season is about 11 episodes based on the first graphic novel Preludes and Nocturnes.
And
I don't know anything about Sandman.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it either, but this is already in production.
Pre-production. Yeah, the deal is official, everything is going on.
But they want to put it out by next year if I remember correctly. Like
okay.
I saw some soft
I wouldn't be surprised.
2020 dates.
It seems like a Christmas 2020 thing would be really good for something like this.
Yeah, and yeah, because they have like first images.
Okay. Oh, really? I like the concept art for what they want to do for the characters.
I think I saw one image of it, preliminary.
Cool.
Potentially, but yeah.
This is really exciting for me. Like, I Sandman is such a beloved comic, even to non-comic readers. I don't mean to say that condescendingly, but people will come into the shop just for something like Sandman. Neil Gaiman has such a following as an author that's a big
deal. I mean, I wouldn't take it that way. Just like the person who doesn't normally read comics, it's the one story that can cross that border really easily.
It's like that saga. Mm.
And Neil Gaiman's, all of his things that have been adapted into film thus far have been amazing, incredible.
Yeah,
like, I've never seen a bad Neil Gaiman.
You know,
Gaiman
it's like it's hot cold too for people. Like
really?
Some people really don't love the adaptations, but and I think you have a tendency of leaning in one direction. Like you really like them all. For me, Stardust is one of the most underappreciated films in like the past 10 years.
I don't think I've seen that one.
It's awesome. Charlie Cox, Daredevil, plays the lead character in that one.
I'm mostly thinking of like. First two that come to mind are Coraline and American Gods.
I'm enjoying Good Omens so far.
Oh yeah that too. So
the big problem I have with this is how the hell can DC keep failing at getting their own fucking properties on their streaming service? They have we have DC Universe. Why is DC Universe?
Because I'm starting
not
to wonder
this?
If they're shooting that down the rabbit hole so they can make their other little
the Warner Brothers service.
Yeah, which I'm like, I don't want that.
If it's a channel within the Warner Brothers service and it's part of like the whole thing, I'm going to be fine with that. But yeah, I feel like the DC Universe as we know it is not long for this world.
Yeah, which is really sad because other than Swamp Thing, I've been loving all those properties.
Yeah, and the revival of Young Justice was... I don't want it to end!
Oh, no, dude. So. Oh, man. As long as I can get some more Young Justice and some more Doom Patrol, I'm going to be fine.
Yeah, Doom Patrol definitely needs Season 2. And we know Titan Season 2 is in production right now. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Cool. All right, well, I guess we'll move on to some reviews. Kat, do you want to start with your top of the stack, or do you want to start with your favorite character?
That's not fair, because I read Damned first, because I want to know how the stupid story ended, but this was beautiful.
your pick. I leave it to you. You lead us off on one of those two. I'll snag the other one.
So we'll go with Superman Up in the Sky, because it was beautiful.
This is...
And we've got writer Tom King and Andy Kubert.
Kubert?
Yeah, Kubert. I thought you said Cooper. I was like, what?
Cobra.
Yeah. Andy Kubert for art. Well, let me tell you, you can't just, like, read this and go to bed because you just get sad. You're just like, why life? Man, I don't know if I'm going to be okay.
I mean,
way to give a super... it's like, what you know, he's like, yeah, here, this superhero has a ton of hope, but I'm going to destroy you first.
Well, that's Tom King, right? Like,
well,
that's...
yeah, no, totally. Which is good. When he does stuff like this, it's normally really good. So I think... leaving him out of continuity and doing shorter series is... sign me up.
Yeah. So this is a comic that in its its existence is very strange because this was the part of the Walmart giants that were, you know, $5 for these weird anthology books that had 12 pages of new story in it. So, actually, Superman Up in the Sky number one is the first two of those. So
oh, is it really?
Yeah, there is actually a part two marker that is when he actually gets to Ron.
I missed that.
Or Ran, I don't know. Yeah. I've heard that pronounced many different ways. I think I always says Ran when I was a kid.
Oh, I guess you're right. I'm dumb.
Yeah.
That's what they say it in Young Justice.
In Justice, they say Ran.
Yeah, I remember that too because the subtitle, they mention Ran and it the subtitle was Iran.
Yeah. I remember the subtitles in that were really bad.
I the art in this book, Andy Kubert drawing Superman is just a dream. Like it's so good and he's so powerful and man that cover too. Like the cover is just so quintessentially Superman just flying through as like missiles are flying past him. It's just great.
This comic really like mainly addresses one of the biggest questions that I've always had about Superman is like, because he sees everything and can hear everything pretty much that's happening on the whole planet. So what happens when he's too busy to save someone? Because that's his whole thing, is saving everybody always, no matter what.
Well, that's why I was surprised to see his dad alive in this, because I think that in a lot of the stories, a lot of them use his dad dying of like a heart attack or something to teach him he can't save everyone.
Right.
Oh, is that what it was? A heart attack? Because I know. I think in some versions there's a car crash.
It's a car crash, and I think the New 52 is a car crash actually.
Yeah, they usually just kill him off in some way where he can't get to him, and he has to learn he can't save everyone. So, but they like took that. They're like, well, we're going to use that with people that you don't necessarily aren't close to you, so you'll have a much harder time.
Right.
Yeah.
Watch, especially children.
That was an interesting thing, is like playing up the angle of like Superman's influence on kids and like the positive negative of that fact, especially after he's plugged into the machine.
Yeah.
Like, when he's plugged into that machine on Ran, and he's going through, like, a psychological breakdown and sees a kid literally just kill himself.
Well, get hospitalized.
I don't know if he...
Oh, I guess you're right. The kid does get hospitalized.
No, one of the kids does die. The little girl talking about the toy that's... Well, you're
she
toy.
Dies
she
in
dies.
The hospital.
Yes.
Does he get that information before...
I don't know.
I can't remember.
I feel like it was before.
Yes, because it's the conversation with Batman, isn't it?
Yeah, because that was the one where he's like, I'm going to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
So that informs the psychology that he's like, the breakdown that he's going through in that machine. Which is weird, because the machine was like, he's using Zeta Beam technology to track somebody through space. Like,
that was weird.
Rather than actually beaming. I'd never seen the Zeta Beams used that way, so I thought it was really inspiring.
I didn't even really know about them, to be honest. I think I've heard them once or twice, and I never really thought about what they were.
Yeah, right over my head.
They deal with it in Young Justice a little bit. Once again, Young Justice being this, like, perfect thing.
I know they have Zeta Tubes.
Oh, yes, yeah, their teleportation technology is based on the Zeta Beam.
Isn't that what it is? Okay, so that's...
But Adam Strange.
It hits right at the top of my head. Not quite over it, but definitely above my eyesight.
It's basically like energy beams that are teleporting beams that appear at specific times because of where they're being sent from.
Interesting.
The design for his parents is very interesting. It's very, like... What would you say, like, 80s-esque?
I was thinking, 80s, like, Man of Steel by, oh, God, I just broke down completely.
Well, his mom literally has, like, a little baby cape, and I don't know if it's just the way he's seeing things. Yeah, she does.
No, I know, I see it.
Or if that was really what they
were.
I love the sun motif in the other.
And they've got the giant key, too. Yeah. Oh, yeah, shit, they're standing on a roof over here. Damn, God. No, this comic made me sad in so many ways, and I'm like, do I have joy in this pile?
As a Superman fan, how did you feel just in general? Like,
so like I said, my favorite thing about Superman, and this is why I've been reading a lot of back stuff lately, the way that a lot of, like, the best way I can explain this is going to be a bit of a story, which is one of my friends saying how he renounced his U.S. citizenship in, like, 900 or whatever.
Okay.
But in Unchained, I think Scott Snyder did it better in kind of explaining what he is to America and the rest of the world. And I always like the takes on him of taking from the fact that he's got all these godlike powers, but he's just a man stumbling through.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this is. It's him stumbling through. Like, the best thing I can think of is a quote that Lex Luthor says in Unchained, where he's like, he's just stumbling through life like the rest of us. He goes by trial and error. He doesn't know automatically what to do correctly, and that's what this is. Is this trial and error?
He's not the plan ahead guy. He's living like a farm kid. He's like, I'm gonna go and do this.
He's gonna try it, see if it works. It doesn't work. It backfired on him, so he does something different. And that's what the whole point of the Zeta Beams was. Is once the little girl dies, because he's talking to his dad, and he's like, well, she'll be waiting and she'll have hope. And he's like, he's just sitting there. And I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah. Because you're right. I mean, like, really the only thing he knows how to do and like, properly is to punch evil in the face.
Yep.
But, like, determining what is evil has always been, like, a struggle. Like, unless somebody's, like, you know, burning, like, actively burning down an entire town.
Then... Well, so the other thing, the big thing with this is he's like, it kind of shows him he's got a little bit of he's a little like Batman, which is, what are they going to do without me if I go? Can they survive? Is everyone going to be okay if I go run off into space and God only knows how many weeks away I'll be?
Yeah. Well, and then his conversation
with, gonna be okay?
Is his conversation with Lois about, like, I promise not to fall off.
Yeah.
Well, I'll try not to fall off any buildings in the meantime.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's just a funny, like, a joke on the difference in the way that Lois has been portrayed over the years.
Oh,
Lois
is
much more enjoyable in something like this.
I like I like her little every other week comment, too, since she's like, I feel like I've been falling up, like, something about, like, I fall off a building every other week.
Yeah.
And that was, you know, because it's bi-monthly.
Right. Yeah. The schedule for the comics.
So, for me, I always like stories where they show, like, because my thing is I always get, everybody's like, oh, well, he just has too many powers. I'm like, that's the point. It's like, you gave these to a regular dude who just wants to do good in the world, and he doesn't know what to do. So he plays trial and error, and he's not any better than the rest of us.
Nope. And he would never say that he is.
No, never.
So. But just like everybody else, he's trying his best to do his best, and constantly realizing that you can't be perfect, even if you
are biggest,
perfect.
Yeah. Like, the biggest point to this comic, too, is you kind of see the little bit of ego that he has, because he's kind of like, that's why him and Batman get along. They just express differently, which is, there's only one of me, and I'm the only one who can stop certain things. So.
Yeah.
The weight of the world on his shoulders, that he has to go into the universe, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cool. All right, well.
This won't get any better.
Yeah, we're going to move on to Batman Damned number 3, or book 3, I should say. Give the title what it's due. Written by Brian Azzarello, with art by Lee Bermejo. This is the end of Batman Damned and the end of Batman.
I don't even know anybody else. This is like the one thing is, like, I feel like the last time I read a Brian, I can never say his name,
Azzarello
and Lee Bermejo comic, I read it and I'm like, I don't get it, what happened? Because I read Batman Noel and it was the same thing. I was like, what?
Yeah. I can tell you one thing I don't question. The book is real fucking pretty.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Oh, yeah. I was just reading this at work, and, like, every now and then someone will, like, be standing there, and they commented, like, on the Swamp Thing splash page in the beginning. They were like, whoa.
Yeah.
Well, that was the thing. I like how he kind of portrayed Swamp Thing as, like, a giant entity, not some, like, normal, bigger than normal man-sized thing. Now he's like an actual giant.
Well, and I think that's part of, like, is he in some sort of middle ground between the afterlife and real life, and that's why Swamp Thing is portrayed that way.
So what I got out of this, and I'm sure you guys have different readings than I do, but I got this as Batman becoming the Joker. So this is kind of like...
That was my question.
This is kind of a cyclical origin story.
Or...
an ending story.
So the thing is I'm like, or in the back of my mind, because he says, as you judge others... Oh, shit, what was it? Oh, it says, you are judged. And then, because I remember before that, he's like, is this hell?
Yes.
Or something like that. And then they judge him, and his life, his hell life, is him becoming the Joker.
Yeah, and that's him, and that's the Green Arrow, too, saying that. So
is it the Green Arrow?
I thought that that guy was supposed to be the Green Arrow.
I thought it was the Spectre.
Oh. So, see, I got the Green Arrow because he was talking about you were judged, and that's, like, a kind of close to the Green
you
Arrow.
You know what? We could both be right.
But does it matter?
Because well, this is... there was a moment in time where the Green Arrow dies and be... Oh, no, Hal Jordan became the Spectre.
Yeah, I'm gone.
So, anyway.
Yeah, but either way, I think him becoming the Joker would explain why everything is so nightmarish, and this is like because we're seeing Gotham City and the world from the Joker's perspective.
Well, so the other part is too, is I didn't really I wish he were still alive, and then he gets sucked in, slam, and then you just go to the next page and it's him coming out of the water. So half the time it makes me wonder if it his hell is to be the Joker, and I was like, damn.
And I kind of took it that
way. Batman, damn.
his hell was to know that he's in eternity and he can't fight the Joker's darkness. So the world is going to be have to deal with a Joker with no Batman.
You know, ironically, I think the first cover that we got is that panel right there, or close to it.
Oh, yeah, you're right. The first cover is pretty much Batman's face destroyed.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you guys, you might have a better read on it than I do, though, because the way that the mouth is growing, like the cut is growing, is very much like the Joker's smile, so maybe it is him becoming the Joker.
And I'm pretty... Yeah, that's definitely what I got. That was one of the main reasons, is because he has the cut. And also, now that you say it, like, this cover has the... What would that be? The right half of the Joker's face? And I'm pretty sure the first cover is the left half of Batman with the scar on it, if I remember
when
correctly.
When does he get the scar, too?
He gets it in the cemetery.
The cemetery by one of the statues.
Yeah, by one of the angels.
The Enchantress angels?
Yeah.
That's
so, and the Enchantress is like the personification of the devil, right? Like, she's trying to take his soul because she thinks that he had made that pact in childhood.
That would be all that.
Here it is. When she gets, that's what he gets. It is right in this paneling. It's whacked.
He gets scratched. And
so then is Constantine like who is it? Saint Michael?
Trying to guide.
Like, yeah, or the boatmen on the River Styx.
I will say this.
Something like that.
Right. I'm probably going to have to reread all three of them
together. I'm kind of wondering.
Such a big gap.
Does he die in the Batcave? Because we don't really see Constantine again,
right?
Until he puts the new armor on and goes to visit. Because that's the first time Constantine visits
him,
right?
First time he saw
He could die in, like, the first few panels because he's in the ambulance.
Yeah,
but I think that he actually physically fights the ambulance out and runs.
Well, but that could be...
The spirit dying?
The first... Yeah. That could literally be his first death hallucination is him leaving the ambulance, when in reality he's still in there.
Well, he literally goes into his home and goes naked, you know, like, pulls himself off. So it's... And is reborn with an entirely new bat suit, so it almost feels like that's like he tried to make it to Alfred, and then Alfred had to be there as his son dies, and that's it. Oh no, Alfred's not in the story, right?
No, Alfred's not in it at all.
So it's complete emptiness when he gets there.
Yep,
and he's bowing at the foot of the suit.
Yeah, and he's completely naked.
Yeah, so I'm wondering if that is his death. Like, we're seeing it right there as he dies.
Interesting.
Because it is the inevitability of being stabbed that kills him, and not in the moment that he dies.
Yeah.
Yeah, that could be because he gets stabbed like a dozen times or something.
Yeah.
I think that it was multiple times.
Well, I don't think he interacts with anybody who isn't Constantine after that moment.
Well, no, because he interacts with everybody who's magical, because he ends up talking to Deadman when he possesses someone, and then Zatanna,
Swamp Thing.
So he never deals with a normal
Etrigan.
After that moment. So I think he's alive when he's fighting the cops, but he's, like, pushing himself to death. Like, he's almost there. And then once he starts interacting with the magical beings, that's it. He's not there anymore. They're trying to help be his guide, but they can't be overt about it because of the way, like, spirits work.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he's so, and like the big thing is he keeps seeing the Enchantress, and she shows up finally. That this pig gave me
nightmares. She's like dead demon face Enchantress.
Yeah, that I'm pretty sure terrifying. She's like, you owe me your soul, and then.
Yeah. I think this is a hard book to analyze by itself, and especially with the distance that between
issues. How many months was that?
It had to be. I think it was three.
Yeah, three if not four, right?
So that's. Yeah.
This might have to be. I might have to go home and reread them all.
I definitely need to. I was meaning to reread them.
Me too. This is too many other things out right now.
Yeah.
Right?
I want to read this, but look at all this other shiny stuff over here.
We really like. We took an antiseptic approach to this, and we're sure just analyzing what happened. How do we actually feel about the story?
I enjoyed it a lot. I so far haven't really ever been disappointed by anything that Azzarello and Bomeo ever put out together. Honestly.
I haven't been too upset about Azzarello in general.
Yeah, I was honestly really scared that they kept pushing it back and pushing it back and pushing it back because they read it and they didn't like it, and I was like, God dang it.
I got that the other way around, like they were trying to make it perfect.
Yeah,
and it was damned near close to perfect.
Well, his art also, I don't know how long it takes him, but it has to take him a while to draw this stuff too.
Oh yeah, because there's some level of like specific after effects that were done to like separate characters and background. Like,
well, I've always looked at his stuff. Does he like paint them, or does he just use an effective?
I think it is digital paint and digital inks.
Okay,
that's what it seemed like to me. Because he does. There's scenes in this where you have certain aspects faded in and faded out for background and foreground effects,
and things in the foreground have a heavy black ink line still to them, you know, like they're outlined and
and because he colors this as well too, am I correct?
Yes, he does
everything.
Yeah, so the
except for the lettering, I believe.
Yeah,
so
the lettering still is so good.
Yeah,
I don't know. I know there's I have certain friends out there that are like font fiends, like crazy about
fonts.
Well,
I'm more curious to know if he does like these ones that are actually on the page.
I don't think so. I think the letter does. He may guide in terms of what they're looking, but I wouldn't be surprised if Azzarello has more to do about that.
Yeah.
Well, and they do like really important things, like the no
Jared
screen.
K. Fletcher is the one, is the letterer.
Okay, so there is a letter.
I wonder why Constantine wears a mask.
I was thinking about that too, because he takes it off like immediately.
Yeah. He takes it off, but he also doesn't he pick it back up and put it back on?
Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I was thinking about the mask in general as well. When you mentioned that you thought it was the Green Arrow, the way that they light the hooded figure, he has what looks like a domino mask in shadow. So.
Yeah.
In the one scene. Oh, God.
I wish he were still alive. It is a really interesting... So, he laughs. The Joker's laughing as the end moment of this. Is that Bruce laughing because he won? Because now the Joker can't hurt anybody because he's the one in the Joker's body? Or is it madness and he's trapped and he's forever going to be the
Joker? I honestly think his hell is to be the Joker.
And you think that's what we're seeing? I mean, it's called Damned, so I guess that's pretty much...
Yeah, or at least to see the world from his perspective. Because, okay, so there's the thing in the Scott Snyder Batman who laughs, where it's like the Joker has Joker gas in his heart, or where when you kill him, then like you become the Joker.
So I saw this
as Batman killing the Joker, and then this like the Joker is finally like, yes, he killed me.
That final sequence could be more metaphorical than it is something we're actually seeing. Like it's not necessarily the original Joker coming out of the water. It could be Batman coming out of the water, but now he has transformed and become the Joker, literally.
Yeah, that's what I got. I thought he wasn't dead, but now he is the Joker. And, like, this whole book is how he's perceived, how the Joker sees the world.
Joker died.
Yes.
And Batman in killing Joker literally becomes him because of, like, the contingencies that Joker has on himself.
Yeah, not just the contingencies, too, but also going back to, like, a metaphorical statement there, like, Batman killing the Joker would be that one bad day.
Yeah,
to put him over the
edge.
At least that's what I took out of it.
That's some heady shit.
But
every single time he writes a book, man, I'm like, wait.
Oh, that means there's more to this. Oh, nuts.
This is great. This is
No, it's not bad by any means. I just, when you hit that point in the night and you don't have that high level of thinking and you're just like, damn it.
It's a day reader. For sure. Yeah. Not an end of the night reader.
Yeah, it is not. Especially
I had to read this twice. I had to make sure that I got it again.
I read it fully twice and then, like, kind of skimmed it a third time to, like,
honestly, I want to read the other stuff. I want to read the other two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because I do remember at one point, too, in the fog, when he's running after the Joker, he sees his face in the fog, so.
Or at least the smile.
Yeah.
Which, coincidentally, looks a lot like the bat symbol.
Harley sleeping with him. Because Harley always loved the Joker.
Oh, yeah.
The
that's
broken
the
love. Like, yeah. She's literally...
She's showing him the
who he is.
Oh my god.
That's kind of dark.
Wow.
Well, I mean, the whole book is dark.
I was going to say, I don't really know what cheery part of this book there was.
Oh my gosh,
if I'm speaking quite honestly, there wasn't a cheery part to this book at all.
Wow. Do you know off the top of your head if this is going to be released as an omnibus?
It will be released as a hardcover, yeah.
Or a hardcover?
Yeah.
Nice. So that would be a good read.
I would suggest it.
I kind of want to flip through it to see what was edited in the first issue. Oops.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that's true. Because I think we all have the first printing of issue one.
The only printing of issue one.
Yeah.
The only printing. Oh really? They didn't do a second printing.
Nope. There's a digital release, I think, but that's it.
Because I thought they changed it to the.
They said, "Yeah, we changed it for all future printings."
Oh, for future print, but they haven't had a future.
Nope,
printing.
There was never a second print.
Interesting.
Cool.
So, all right. great series, great book.
Oh, yeah.
Cool.
Well, Azarello and Bermejo, I actually haven't read anything by either of them before, but I
Oh, we can talk.
To, oh, yes, we will, right after this. So, but we should say bye now so we can get to chatting.
Yay!
All right, well, bye!